Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Effects, where the thinking Mason can hang his hat for a little while, and we can have a conversation about some of the influences on Masonry today. And it's an amazing day. This is the 4th of September, 2016, here in this part of the world. It's the Labor Day weekend, where we collectively acknowledge the role, the importance of the idea of labor and the people that perform it. Very interesting times that we're in, undergoing re-examination of values trying to come up with strategies to reinvent and rejuvenate some social and economic experiments that have come full circle. There's only 248 days. This is the 248th day of the year. There's 118 left. 18 days until autumn, until the autumnal equinox, when you and I and the planet are in balance. Same amount of daylight as night. So it's interesting challenges that we face. I wanted to particularly talk today about some information influencing not only organizations like Freemasonry, but societies, cultures, and around the world, whether we're in rural and developing nations or industrialized sites. That's the effect of technology. I want to premise this, with a sense that there's still this notion of the order in a global sense that wasn't necessarily so prevalent in days gone by. We kept thinking that it's easier to focus on local solutions to these large situations, these large complications, particularly when we have an order the size of ours here in this jurisdiction. It does raise questions about how we get the message out, how we communicate. And you think about it, this is a very, very large, very old institution. And we often underestimate or don't address the complications of that communication brings alone. Nothing to do with the order. We all experience the consequence, the effect of that. But to lay claim or to ever suggest, you know, that it's simply a matter of blaming the organization is ridiculous. Yeah, because it's ridiculous in a couple of ways. And at the end of the show, I think you'll have I hope I'll be able to persuade you that this is what we're experiencing are consequences of forces and influences well outside the order. No matter how secluded it might be, however private it might be, and however important the control of information, it might be, as it is with all effective organizations, we are all subjected to forces. And I don't mean that any way in the military sense of the term. I think in the 21st century, we've eclipsed that problem. That's out there. And it casts doubt on our claim that we can solve our problems with weaponry and force and violence. It really does begin to speak to the wisdom of the philosophers, and we really have a struggle with that. Because when we're faced with the challenge that violence or confrontation doesn't really solve any problem, it leaves us struggling to find an option that has that same emotional currency. We need something satisfying, like the victory, the visceral sense of conquering. It seems that the philosophers are teaching us that it's an illusion. That it's an illusion. Very, very deep ethical questions buried inside of that. How did I come at this this question or concern about the connections and the effects of technology? Well, I want to go back to a time that resonates with most Masons and talk to you a bit about Christianity in the 17th century, because I think this has a bearing. I have this sense that everything before us was strict and factual and effective, and that somehow the way we practice or live or our beliefs today need to be strengthened and reinforced. You know, we need to be more of that Calvinist school of orthodoxy. Something severe, because we have this unpronounced sense that things have become too loose, expectations have become too loose, and that if we only strengthened and clarified the line and demanded accountability to that line, that our life in the world would be better. So we need to, here in Masonic Effects, challenge that myth and call it out for what it is. It's that kind of thinking has always, always, always prevailed. And we know this because our archaeologists have provided some slight evidence that doesn't necessarily mean everybody on the planet at the time was thinking this way, but it's evidence that some were. And we know that in some of the steles in Egypt can be found graffiti. And one part that as a student we were taught, as students we were taught, had to do with the lamentation of one of the stone carvers, complaining and talking about his children not being obedient, his daughters having their own views, and his feeling that that the society was far too tolerant, and his desire for that sort of strictness, that he was expecting obedience, and as long as we could grasp that, the world would be a better place, his family would be a better place. And that kind of a comment is commonplace today. We hear it in the halls and in the marketplace. And what it speaks to when we began to take it apart and examine it, and yes, this is prone to the criticism of the deconstructionists. Yes, I absolutely agree. What it tells us was that at any stage And those kind of comments are relative. And we may not always understand what in the world that means. It's relative to the eye of the beholder. We may have expectations, but are all of the ingredients, all of the necessaries in place to achieve that? So this notion that everything, that the world as in a, living in a pious environment was a better place, really doesn't stand up well to a reality check. It was harsh and dangerous. At the beginning of this century, the 17th century, James I of England opposed the papal deposing power, and he did that in a series of papers. And then there was the assassination of Henry IV of France, and this made an intense focus on theological doctrines and concerned with a lovely word, tyrannicide. Henry and James pursued a peaceful policy of religious conciliation. Catholic Protestant aimed at eventually healing the breach caused by the Protestant Reformation. Nothing wrong with a little terror in the church. There was progress along these lines, and it seemed more possible during the 12 years truce. You put down your weapons. But after 1620, things changed. And the situation of Western and Central Europe after the Peace of Westphalia left things more stable but entrenched that, I don't know, I use the word radicalization or polarization between Protestant and Catholic territorial regions. Things weren't calmer. Then there were conflicts in Catholic France over Jansenism. Conflicts. It means people were dying. The end of the 17th century, there was a debate represented in the Republic of Letters. And this was largely a network of scholars and very, very bright people who commented in detail on religious matters as well as those of science. Sort of that sense that of objectivity, the preservation, that if we examine things objectively, we may get a deeper grasp of the facts. And then there were proponents of wider religious toleration. You and I live in a culture that's the result of this effort. Now, even around today, there are, and you and I have heard them, people that are very intolerant. So this is not to say that it's a totalitarian approach to the world, that everybody toes a line. We know that cultures have revolt, they're repulsed by that kind of despotism and dictatorial power. We know that. And yet that still exists. And there are people that will still claim, whether that's the Stockholm syndrome, where you start to align yourself with the values of your captors, or it's a deeper belief held by them. Some people will believe that the severity of Stalin was better than the toleration that exists today. At least that they blame their situation and their poverty. So blame and responsibility are a two-edged knife, aren't they? But I'm talking about here middle 17th century. These are the values that were on the mind of the men who were galvanizing these looser ideas of fraternity and ethics into an organization, a trend, an influence, yeah. But there were still many, many legends and superstitions in the time. And now don't you start to pointing your finger at me and telling me that today we are rid of all superstitions. Come on. You've not seen any of our athletes step onto the playing field? or what happens when people are undergoing a major event. They want that little extra edge that whatever it is, luck will bring to them. Now there was, so the battles were, now do you say the fighting was worse back in these days? This is leading up to the Enlightenment. The Age of Enlightenment grew to challenge Christianity as a whole. And it elevated, it did, by elevating human reason above divine revelation. And it downgraded religious authorities, such as the papacy. Not just that one, but that's an example. You see what the Age of Enlightenment did? You see the effect on all faiths, regardless of faith in the divine, belief in the divine. Human reason was beyond that. Oh my, did we create do we just open up Pandora's box with that one? But if we sit back and think about it, take a deep breath, we can understand what that statement is attesting. And we would value that. And we can value that. Although at the same time, because we have some elemental intelligence, we can hold a contrary position. Oh, there is nothing beyond or above divine revelation. And in the other ear, but science. Science has given us, in history, has taught us that there are limits to that role of the divine as the primary source of all that is. I don't go to church doctrine to ask about physics. Wouldn't. That would be sort of very short-sighted. And history shows me and the error of the way. Now the argument might play out that once we establish the Godhead, that is impenetrable and unalterable. And yet evidence, science, continues to evolve. So in a sense, what was true 50 years ago may not be true today. So how can that be a step beyond, more important, more value than divine revelation? Divine revelation is consistent. Science isn't. Science is consistent in terms of asking the question. And divine revelation has answered the question. Science always lingers over the question yet to come. So we can observe what was going on. We can observe the Christian traders involved in the Atlantic slave trade. We can observe the land wars between Christianity and Islam that continued into the campaigns of the Habsburgs and the Ottoman Empire. And still the remnants of that are going on. You know, it was a recent couple of, wasn't that long ago, we had somebody instilling that kind of nastiness by declaring a military intrusion into the excursion into the Middle East as the new crusade. Oh, I guess if you don't think about the horror that the crusade brought to Arab tribes, you can say that you could aggrandize it. Sad. So all I'm saying is the context that we hang our hats on. If we're hanging our hat on the sense that what was going on previously was some way purer or more instinctive or simpler, we can continue that myth as long as we ignore the facts. Fast forward a little bit. Let's try not to ignore the facts about what's going on around us. I began to wonder about the effect of technology on our order. I don't know what it is, what effect that would be, but I began to wonder, is there an effect, and what would it be? And I'm a sort of a loose student of McLuhan, you know, the message in the media. So I put it like this for us all today. When did smartphones become Masons? We're going to have a little bit of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers just to get us into a good groove for this. This is his tune from 1958 called Moonin'. It's got Lee Morgan on trumpet and Benny Goldson on tenor sax and Bobby Timmons on piano and Jimmy Merritt on bass and, of course, Art Blakey on drums. We'll be back, right back. That's Art Blakey. Just a little bit of something there for all of us. We are working on the notions of the things that hijack Freemasonry. Even the, we have the pleasure of re-examining the history, the root, the big bang of Masonry. We find that it is not, as the United Grand Lodge of England, is simply as the United Grand Lodge of England states, the result of St. John's Day in 1717. What led up to that? Now, but we already know that John Anderson was talking about the need for reviving Freemasonry. Revival of what? But keep those questions in mind. And then you'll ask yourself whether they have a bearing today or not. I want to talk to you a bit about the effect of technology. But I first want to know when you began. You and I began making smartphones into Masons. It isn't whether it will happen. It already has. And so smoothly, hardly a Mason noticed. The cachet of Masonry has been shifted. Public accessibility came at a cost. While we stand looking at each other puzzled, the world is moving just as quickly as it ever has done. Crowdsourcing has pushed direct marketing in the hands of anyone. In a way, I like to think of Freemasonry as original crowdsourcing. The definition of universality is a practical reality. Through the World Wide Web, fringe and disenfranchised groups have found a voice, some of it good, some of it radicalized and disturbed. Terrorism has taught us the vulnerability of peace, as if we have been lulled by two world wars into believing peace was achievable without sacrifice. As the battlefield came to the streets of Damascus, Aleppo, New York, and Paris, citizen accountability has to be reevaluated. With such open access to information, how are we exploring and teaching ethics? How are we promoting morality and humanism? And in this startling environment, Masonry, assuming the persona of a sphinx, has used the stony, ambiguous stare one time too often and created a gap that's now being filled by a smartphone. Is technology forcing change on us, or is this the end of structural Masonry as we know it? Today, Masonic Effects discusses the limits of our capacity to adapt. The explanation, of course. A young man can find out the history of Freemasonry in considerable detail by using his smartphone to connect to the internet and ask his questions. All of the information that has been, it's not been leaked, it's been shared. Shared by Masons of earlier times and the current time, putting it out there as fact. As if the control of that information somehow made us better or more powerful, but that notion of our vulnerability has changed. In some areas still in the world, people are vulnerable because of their gender identity or because they have an affiliation or declaration of being a Mason. Still, you and I might scoff at this, but we shouldn't scoff when it's costing good men their freedom and perhaps even their lives. It's a little too serious to joke about, and we certainly have no business taking it for granted. the privileges and freedoms that we enjoy in a tolerant society. The underlying or subtext to that is that we are an organization, as an organization, encourage tolerance. What about the effect of technology? I don't hear this said by older men or older people. I hear this said by younger people about older people. I hear some older people saying that they won't use a bank machine or they can't understand something. But they drive around in a car that has, what, about 30 computers in it, helping it to run. They may still think that they have a mechanical process to that controls their accelerator and brakes. Okay. Or their steering system. I still think when I hear an older person being rude, I don't necessarily think that I generalize that to every old person or every old man because he talks too loud and I find out he's deaf. I don't think that that all old men are rude because of those one examples. So to hear anybody generalizing that old people can't do something, I think is ridiculous and it's invalid. There's no evidence. There are cases of it. Yeah, just like today, there are still people who believe in the flat earth society. Members of it, whether it's tongue in cheek or it's true, there are still people that believe today that mankind walked with the dinosaurs, even though there was about 150 million year gap. Belief is what people believe. Let's look at just a couple of things that have happened because of technology. Before we start with, as an organization that will, I would put to you, formed on the notions of innovation. They're great innovators, were ahead of their time. In the 18th century and the 17th century and the 16th century. And those great minds came together collegially. And what I know of Masonry is largely the efforts and product of good fellows, guys that made a contribution. Now, I don't think they made contributions to gain some attention as a Mason. I think they gained attention as a Mason because they were doing good things. They were good men. They were men of ethics. Today, I think it's wrong-minded for anybody to think that people are accomplishing good things and making positive contributions because they're a Mason. Not because they're a Mason, they happen to be a Mason. It speaks about the temperament, the caliber, not the temperament, but the caliber of the person. Does that mean that these fellows are all worldly and all perfect? We give our heads a shake. There's a couple of things that modern technology has done. Now, if we're sitting on the edge of a wall, and we're wondering which side to cast our ballots on. Before we jump in, put both feet into our mouths, we want to be able to think about what's been going on and what is happening to Freemasonry as a result of technology. Let's keep in mind, the back of your mind while we do this, this notion of tolerance and inclusion, two important aspects of the craft. I suggest to you that Freemasonry has now developed a global presence, a global mentality. It's out there in the internet. It's with fewer boundaries, but a shared and extensive sense of ethics. One of the first things that the internet, the technology has allowed us to do is to conquer language barriers. Technology has the ability to unite different cultures. So we have this in through Microsoft or Google or VRI translations, nearly instantaneous interpreting, and it's breaking down the language barrier. So smart devices really make this a lot easier, and it makes it consistent and convenient. Now, that doesn't mean that the nuance and the way that language is put together and forms ideas in every culture is just on the same plane. It's different. We have to, but with translation, we can go back and forth with these new technologies. We can go back and forth and discover and become more and more accurate in achieving and understanding the meaning of what is being said in these different languages. So we've conquered that, transforming global commerce. The upper few percent have acquired and amassed the wealth of what, the bottom 90%? Any thinking person realizes that the experiment has gone off the rails. This was never intended. In other words, there are some limits to this type of economic policy. It fits in with the same kind of imbalanced view that there are too many people in the world to feed. We can't feed them all, and we have to watch the herd being culled because it's the natural order. Well, when this was stated in, 19th century? Or I'm just trying to recall which social scientist said it. It was immediately repelled. It was wrong. It was simply an opinion, conjecture. And it's still, we still hear it today. We just, you know, when something wrong is so outrageous, is repeated over and over again down through the years, people begin to believe that it must be true. Well, this is certainly not true. What we have is a serious problem with distribution. The same problem we're having with wealth. We do not have a means to equitably distribute to meet the needs of everyone. Again, with food, we do not have the means to distribute what we produce to meet the needs of everyone. Now, I'm not going to get into it here today why that's the case. Those are very, very large problems. Very, very large systems. You're thinking on a global level. My goodness. Give us a little bit of time, will you, to come up with some solutions? We've got to drag our really bright boys and girls out of bed, get them through the universities and colleges, listen to their innovations, listen to their solutions, and be bright enough to be influenced by them. Yeah, I know that's saying a lot about us. Are we bright enough to recognize the talent, to recognize the brilliance of the ideas, or are we just fearful of change? So we have to transform, and the internet, the new technology allows us to examine these forces and influences and transform and start to declare internationally what ought to be. It's wrong-minded for a few people to have far more wealth than they can ever use, while there are so many people going without. It's given us an opportunity, new technology, of conducting business. We can talk, meet with each other, not just as families or grandpas talking with their grandchildren, but as business people, connecting around the world without necessarily having to move around the world. We can do it from the comfort of our car or from the comfort of our boardroom or our office. Now, business is centered on where we are. And it's becoming easier and more commonplace. Skype, the world's telephone, gives an access point where everybody can be connected. Everybody. That's daunting. That's what, 7.4 billion of us? If nothing should make us sit back and wonder, that that fact alone, that notion of everybody is a little blue and white marble floating in the darkness, being able to communicate, only interesting things are going to come of this. We've never been able to do that before. Since, and when? How long have we been able to do it? 50 years? And how long have we been able to do it with such convenience? 5 years? Does anybody out there tell me when Skype came on board? But I think one of the most appealing and attractive is establishing personal connections. It's got my little Masonic heart beating a little faster. The nature of personal connection has been revolutionized by social interfaces. We use Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter. And we use a lot of technology to be able to establish connections and to find common purpose, common interests with people that ordinarily we would never have met, except for the benefit of technology. I'm one of those people that is still getting used to the idea that my friends are meeting each other and dating and forming meaningful relationships through apps, through dating sites. Instead of walking down the hall or, you know, meeting somebody in church and getting to know one another or through school or business, the reality was that people met others through family contacts, through their job or through school. And other than that, that's the majority of people. We're not talking about those outliers. This is the majority of people. Now, I'm not so sure that that's valid anymore. And perhaps we need to add and through smartphones, smartphone technology. This is networking. And it creates new types of language and new ways of promoting ideas. And we have an instant global awareness, the capacity for instant. Now, what effect does that have? Well, it changes the rule books about propaganda, about filtering and releasing to the people what governments and authorities want the people to know. It certainly rewrote to the rule book. It's conducted the innovation of a Vietnamese war, television cameras on the front line for the very first time, live action. And that's only accelerated to this day. It's all out there. So it's not like we can have somebody translating or interpreting what we're seeing, but we also are able to see for ourselves. And oh my, isn't that creating a bit of a battle of ethics? Who's opinion is most valid, the authority or what is held in popular opinion? And are these different influences precarious? Oh my goodness, yes, just as they always have been. There's a but we do achieve a new and delicate balance. So we get people weighing in from various nations and languages and cultures. But what binds us together is technology. And we can bring up, you and I can look at the past debates. Right now, we can bring up the information about past debates on these ideas. So if you want to know about the nature of this, you can go back and examine the work of Aristotle. It's sitting in front of you. Or if you can't afford it, you have access to this through our modern libraries. So it's a matter of taking the initiative to access information. It's not that the technology is restrictive. And now we can do this if you're blind, if you're deaf, if you're infirmed. I think this is an amazing, amazing time. We can communicate with people that heretofore had been considered, without opinions, without connectivity with the world as we knew it, because we couldn't understand how to communicate with people that. And now we can. Do these four aspects change the world around us? Yeah, certainly they are. And this is not all binding. But inside, think about the consequence of these elements on you and I and on our order. What does this do and how can we take advantage of, how can we make the best use of this information? When we're wondering how to reach out, as I do, to millions and millions of men who I think would make very excellent masons, we no longer can act like we're an intrusion, or that in our shift, our sense of privacy has changed, because now part of that discussion is public. But it's not that this forces an agenda. No, far from it. This is a matter of the use of enlightenment. Now, what promotes enlightenment is you, somebody out there searching for meaning that will find a benefit in connecting with us. Connecting with us. Now, this isn't to say that all technology is a positive kind of an experience. And these forces affect men and our order the same as they affect all reasonable and rational people around. Oh, can we ignore it by not using any technology at all? Hardly. So stop driving. Stop plugging in your fridge. My goodness, my fridge even has a computer in it. My television has a computer in it. My television is a computer. The use of social networking sites has a positive and negative effect. It's amazing how someone can find a long-lost friend through a social networking site. And they can connect. It's fabulous. And society has become remarkably mobile. Our young people, just as young people forever, have had to move to find opportunity. Now we're able to talk about that more. And oh my goodness, we're scandalized. But my relatives got on a ship and came from Scotland back in the 18th century to find opportunity, to be able to feed themselves and support themselves. They went where there was opportunity. It wasn't, I don't think necessarily that they woke up one morning and said, I'm done with rain and cold. I'm out of here. Well, here you come to Canada, rain and cold, Maritimes. You don't have to look too far to find problems associated with social networking sites. There is a big debate about whether there's addiction is real. You know, you see the person walking up the street, bent over, looking at a small screen in the palm of their hand. I'm wondering, what are they reading? Some suggest that these websites contribute to cheating and lead to divorce and have people fired from their jobs and put under pressure because they use these sites at work, because something is posted on a site that's undermined their professionalism, they get fired. It's as if anything that you and I did in our history is out there, because if somebody takes pictures and puts them out there on the net, they linger forever. Well, I would think that the world moves on, and that what somebody does when they're 14 does not necessarily define them at 34. I am one of those people that think that when people are young, they do stupid things. They test, and then they learn from their mistakes. Or are we pretending again that there's a different reality? But to create meaningful relationships is also about sharing our lives and our purpose and our ideas. And so tell me, what does that do with masonry? If a fellow is questioning and concerned, and he has this sense of the history, and begins to think that if something has lasted 300 more years, surely there must be some merit in it, and surely it must be worth considering. Well, I think this is the buildup that this is, it builds up and works on the mythology and mystery of Masonry, and we fall short on the reality. It's almost like, and I don't mean this in any way to discourage or disrespect the value of Masonic philosophy. Far, far from it. But it's almost like we've created a 300-year history of the Harry Potter version of the world. You know, and the reality is that we can't fly. We don't have Druid mentors teaching us. We don't have fluidity with philosophy in every lodge. The masters are not the champions of geometry and articulate and able, being able to explain the connection between and the importance of the great architect of the universe and answer questions about why geometry and what how does that all apply to the development of character. Well, those are conversations and questions that are legitimate, I ask you. And if they are, then the effort here is to match the expectation with the reality. Well, we don't have to scramble, but we need to be able to act like we're thinking things through. And I think we do, at least in my experience, but we're very shy about showing that. We're so shy and self-conscious about proving ourselves to be innovators because we get tongue-tied. Here's an old term, eh? We get tongue-tied. How do we explain in the clamor of the gruff old fellas that are representing their entire generation saying, well, I've never done it that way, or that's not why I even love it better. That's not why I joined Masonry. Well, you've got your own reason. Everyone sit down. You're good. Your reason for joining it isn't changing. But there are other things going on within the order. We can still use the same blueprints to build the same cathedral because it was very sound and beautiful. But that's not to stop the innovator. Do you remember the young apprentice, the apprentice's pillar? You know that story. Well, there was nothing wrong with what his master was producing, except this young upstart produced something more artistic and more beautiful. And our reaction is taught to us by the reaction of the master when he killed his apprentice. And what does that tell us? That we're prone to killing innovation. Now, that's not defining. That does not define Masons. What defines Masons is what we do with that type of declaration. What have we done? Isn't that an interesting little phenomenon? So I'm just going to give you a little bit of a musical breath here while you top up your beverage. A little bit of perspective on Masonry. This is all just conjecture. Technology doesn't have an effect on us. That young man reading everything about the history of Freemasonry before he comes through the lodge, well, that's the problem, eh? That's the problem. We can only stop that technology and sanitize the internet and the world. Let's burn all those books and all that history. There's the way to do it. Didn't work in the 14th century, did it? This is from Brueggenhausen in 2003. It's the Django Reinhardt Group. Thank you. I hope you liked the show today. Thanks for joining us. And I hope we've given you a little bit to chew on for the next couple of days. We can be reached through MasonicEffects@gmail.com. I hope you have a good week and enjoy the long holiday if you're living in this jurisdiction. And we'll look forward to seeing you again real soon. Commit those acts with Masonic kindness. Bye.